Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Sunday Podcast, brought to you guys by sportsshoes.com. As always, look, we mentioned in the week that the British Champs preview is probably one of our favourite episodes. Mate, I think the review's almost just as good, maybe even better, especially when we had the races we've just witnessed this afternoon. I think it's 5:05 now. Man, I've just watched the main day, if you like, of finals and lots of upsets.
Oh, mate, I mean, this is why it's so hard to buy into rankings and times and everything like that, because you watch today and you see the upsets, you know, dominant displays out there from people who should, on paper, you're looking at it, do not have the CV to win these titles. And this is our sport at its best. And I just think it's such a shame, because there's a number of winners out here today who probably will never get a Diamond League ticket. It might get the London Diamond League ticket there, actually, but you know, they're not getting in your gold label tours or anything like that. They're not getting, and there is a part where you have to earn those invites. You know, you have to show your class over a number of years to get those invitations to those big Diamond Leagues, to those gold tours, to those, you know, high caliber races. So I'm not saying, you know, they should just after winning a British Champs title, but it does show you when we're starting to look at I'm just going to look at our men's 15, because I think Arla Ludwig was definitely probably the most surprising winner of the day. Yeah. And you look at him and you look at, you know, we're 337 at BMC, the way he's winning is 146 is over 800. And then you compare that to guys who have had the opportunity to go run on the European circuit and run 333, 334. You know, and he's put them away. And he's just like, he's just attacked that race. He looked like the only man with a plan. Everyone else seemed to be like, right, I'm going to wait till the last, you know, 200 or 300, you know, the classic sort of 1500 meter racing mentality that a lot of people have, rely on that last 200-300 meter kick. But yeah, he led for 700 meters of that race, held them all off, big surge at 2 laps in, phenomenal race. And yeah, I just think this is the sport at its best. You know, you watch it this afternoon, an hour of finals there. It's just like, you're blown away. You're like, oh my God. And then Sarah Calvert to cap off the meet, doing it again to Laura Muir and Snow. Like, how have they not learned? It's actually crazy. Last year. Yeah. And they let the same thing happen. But yeah, whew.
And I think that's the one for me. You mentioned Arla Ludwig's probably the biggest shock. The one for me that highlights the issue with times and rankings is Calvert, because she's done it 2 years on the bounce now. Lightning doesn't strike twice. It's not a fluke. She's well and truly the best 1500 meter runner in the UK, and has been for the past 2 years. That's why we run the race. Okay, we the sport is built upon winning championships. Okay, winning on when it matters, not about times. And she's proven that again. But like you said at the start, mate, we hope she gets an opportunity. She's got a month now. I think last time she had a week or 2 weeks.
Yeah, and she had one opportunity, I think.
Yeah. But yeah, it just shows you that It's not all about times, and with the way tech is going, I think the gap between Diamond Leagues and other has got bigger in terms of with the wave lights, with how good some of the track surfaces are, with how good the pacing is, et cetera, et cetera. It's become bigger than it used to be. Look, when you had Ross Murray on a month or so ago now, he talks about he the sport was at a place in 2012 where he could run a good time at a BMC Grand Prix that would then enable him to get into wherever he needed to next. But that's not the case anymore. That is not the case anymore. It's two different. Mate, where do you want to start in terms of these races? Because like you say, some phenomenal races. We can start, with Arlo.
Yeah, you've got it.
One person I see in that race. I'm really happy for him, Jake Hayward, to see him become a second. But I think he's got to be kicking himself that he didn't win that one. Because I think looking at the people around him, and this is taking nothing away from Arlo Ludwig, but I think Hayward, when he made the move to like get into third, I think if he'd kept going, he almost like went round the curve to get on him after the first move, and then he almost sat in behind and then backed himself in the last 100. I think if he just kept going and hit the front when he made his first move and had a bit of a smoother run, I think his quality would have paid there. But great to see him back on a podium.
Do you know, I agree with that. You know, Jakob seems to have inspired a few of these 1500 men to like go right to the back. I think Tyler Billiard's got his race a little wrong today. He looked really impressive in the heat, and you know, and then sort of like you watch him do that heat, you're like, yep, Jesus, that's Tyler Billiard for you. Look, you know, just look really good, fast clothes. But yeah, I think, you know, a few of these guys, I mean, Billiard was at the back, Hayward was at the back, wasn't he? Gawley was just way too far back. And the problem is, you know,
I guess we won't speak about Gawley much, but for me, Gawley, prime example of how it should be done, though. Like, the guy's not raced all year, but actually he is fit enough to toe a start line, rocks up, does the heat as his season opener, and he contests the final and shows that he actually has some ambition, because there's definitely some people out there who are not at the point where they can't physically put their spikes on and get around a track. They're just not quite primed, and they're not quite like, oh, I'm not quite ready to race and risk my reputation. But Gawley's had injury problems, but he's fit enough to be on a start line, and so he's there. So just hats off to him, because I know we won't obviously mention him too much in this pod, but time and time again, that guy always shows out, and most of the time he ends up winning, but obviously a bit too far for him this year in terms of those injuries.
Yeah, and I mean, he's got 6 weeks to get fit for the Euros. I mean, he is a Scotland team hasn't been announced yet, has he? But has it? But I think he'll be at the Commonwealth Games, so that's another championship he can use to sharpen up to race over a mile. So if he does get selected for the Euros, he's in. I'm pretty confident he's going to be able to whip himself into shape quite well there. So yeah, I've got to admit, credit to him for lining up. You know, Giles DNF for one reason or another. Gawley sticks in it. You know, and he's got beat fair and square today, and you know he's just a champion of the sport, man. And he just carries himself like just really, really well for me. So
yeah, for me, that should be rewarding more than not showing up and being injured. Like sixth place there, yeah. I think most people look at that and they think, oh yeah, well, that's going to damage my chances of getting picked. But that should be looked upon more favorably than someone who doesn't show up. Yeah. Unless you've got a broken leg, right, and you're in a cast.
I think there's every way that does. If he doesn't come out and run 3:32 in this next 4 weeks for the window, you know, until the window closes, I think that has damaged his chance of getting picked for me. Because yeah, especially when you look at the guys ahead of him and the guys who beat him. But yeah, where were we before? Those guys were too far back. Yeah, those guys were too far back. You know, Billiard, Hayward, you know, they've got great closes. Great, great closes. But they were just too far back. And that's probably stating the obvious. But when, like you said, when Jakob moves, he goes from the back to the front quite quickly. Yeah. Because if you gradually try and move up, you're just in a wrestling match for 300-400 meters. And that's what you basically said about Hayward, right? Like he's moving up. He's putting the hard yards, but he hasn't just done that extra step to get a clear run and get to the front. And that's what Ludwig did.
Right. That's the thing. It meant he had to then go again in the home straight. Whereas, yes, he'd have had to sprint, right? I'm not saying he doesn't have to sprint flat out, but if you've got yourself to the front, you don't have to move quicker than anyone else on the track. You just have to move at the same speed as everyone else on the track.
Yeah.
Whereas he made himself have to move quicker than the whole field to get himself to third. Yeah. And then he had to try and move quicker than the whole field again to go from third to first, which he couldn't do. He could only get himself into second.
Yeah. Exactly that. And, you know, Arlo was pretty far back, makes a big bold move, but he makes it from 800 out, so they're not even running that quick at that point. And he's closed in 52 point for that last lap. Like, that is
600 when he hit the front, right? I think so. He started moving around, and then at 600 he really went.
No. So I had him at about, as soon as 800 was run, you know, 700 to go. Yeah. So yeah, you probably looked at that 600 or whatever.
I think by the time he actually comes around him, it's 600, but he starts the motor at 700 to go. Yeah.
Yeah. He's run 39 for that 39.0 basically for that last 39.9. Sorry, for that last 300, like just very, very impressive. What he did out there, and yeah, he deserved the title. And I think he just, you know, a lot of these men, the 1500 is so hard because you're so close on paper. Kuti was unfortunate. The youngest man in the field, by the way, James Alexander, the Scottish lad, a huge run for him. I mean, one making a final, then, you know, running 340. I was just looking at the ages of these guys because it has it on the results, and you're like, you know what? Yeah, Arlo's 26, Hayward's 27, Tonkey 25, Higgins and Billiard. Are still just 24 years of age. So the future is, and even Archie Davies feels like he's been around for ages. He's still only 27. So the future is looking good for these men.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I think craziest run of the champs in terms of an upset. What's the standard? 334?
333.5.
333.5. So
333.5.
Yeah. Will he get himself in a race? We don't know.
There's probably going to be with the London Diamond League where it is 19th July. I think there will potentially be a spot. It just depends what the demand is on a global scale for that London Diamond League. Is it going to be Josh Kerr's going for the record? We're going to almost have two races within a race, and this is going to be a bit more of a domestic field on offer. Or is it going to be, hold on a minute, you've got the best athletes in the world. You know, you've got Nagoose, you've got...
Is there going to be a mile line of 15?
The deer. Well, they'll have a split.
No, but I meant...
There's not two.
You know when they do the...
there's not two. They may well add another one.
Best way for him to get.
I heard they're going to have a domestic 800. So, which again, just they have a domestic 800. It seems unfair that they don't have a domestic 15 or a domestic 5.
Maybe it's timetabling the 8. You can just slot one in.
Jesus, they just put it a bit earlier in the meet.
Yeah.
You know, the difference between a 15 and an 8 is like a minute and a half, 2 minutes. Right. Like it's not even that much extra work for them, but. Yeah, that's probably the headline for us for the champs is Arlo's victory, Jake Hayward, and that's a very different top three. I guess last year was pretty similar, right? You know, we had guys sneak on the podium, we had Sam Trarrick get third. So basically, British Champs 1500 is in a place where the big guns aren't really doing it, and it's wide open. And who would have called that? Who would have called that? I don't think anyone would have called
Should we chat about the women's?
Called those results, yeah.
Yeah, Sarah Calvert, I think, like we mentioned before, I think it's just ridiculously good run. And almost the same fashion as she won last year. I think this year is interesting watching it. I don't know about you, but myself, when she was in the group that kind of broke away, I was thinking, yeah, she's going to win this. After last year, and Snowden and Muir just did not look like they had any sort of turn of pace in the last 100 at all.
No. And yeah. I mean, that's the season's best for Calvert. She ran 4:08 this year. She's run 4:12. She's run outside 2 minutes.
God, I think she's in 4 minute shape.
Well, you know, we kind of, you know, after last year, you're like, oh, you kind of say the same thing. You know, she must be able to go quicker. I mean, the standard, what was it, 4:03.5? That's definitely going to be doable for her.
Yeah, she ran 4:04 last year.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, 4:04 last year. So I think she will be able to, and she's timed her seasons well if she's coming into shape now, and it's clearly taken her a few races to get going. But yeah, for me, I mean, I was speaking. I had Nancy Bowley in the race who finished 10th in the end, and I was speaking to her before and this morning, and just saying like, surely if you're Laura Muir or you're Snowden or you're Wallace or these people, you're like, after what Sarah Calvert did last year, you're just not going to take a chance, and you're going to try and make a bigger move from a longer way out. You're going to try. Yeah. You're
in
almost going to do.
Wallace thought she did a really good job. I think for where she's at, I think she grabbed the race and tried to make some sort of move, and actually made it quite interesting. It was the expected more from Snowden. Maybe not Muir. I think even Muir. I think even currently. I think I expected a bit more from those two, but I thought Wallace actually had a good go at it.
Yeah, she puts. Yeah, it's a hard one for Wallace because it's another.
She's leading with 100 to go. Yeah, after doing a lot of work, so yeah, she's put herself there.
Yeah, it is a tough one for her. But yeah, I mean, I think you're alluding to the fact you would have expected to see a better kick from Sterling and Muir and people like that. I personally don't think they've got the wheels that they once had. They needed to make this thing much harder from the get. You know, Laura Muir, we've seen make really big surges before, 800 to go, you know, 700 to go, these sort of big moves, and they needed to hurt Calvert. Like, well, on paper, you're looking at it, you're going, you know, okay, she's run season best 407 today. Her PB is only 404. They've run much faster than her. You've got to make these athletes hurt from a longer way out. But that, as soon as Calvert's there with a lap to go and she feels good, you're like, you're not going to shift her. No. You know, they haven't got the ability to go and drop her on that last lap, but anymore. So they needed to make it. Yeah, it's easy for us to analyze now. But I was surprised they didn't. They don't back themselves. And as for Walcott Nolan, I mean, what DNF? So I don't know what happened there.
She's had some issues there. Like, yeah, I think you're bang on there, mate. In terms of what's strange to me is that, like, Prime Laura Muir can win it any way she wants and could wait to the last moment and kick with 40 meters to go because she's that sharp and she's that much better than everyone else.
She's never,
in the day, she would have been able to do that. Where that's then got worse, the thing that's got worse the most of Muir, you'd expect, right? Obviously, we don't know what any of her test results are or whatever. You'd expect is that short speed, right? Is a 200 meter time is nowhere near as good as it was. A 400 meters flat time is nowhere near as good as it was anymore. So why wait till the end? Why not do what you used to do when you're at your best? And the caliber of field that's there, Snowden's probably the only one that comes with you, or Avea if she's not having any issues. And then you're putting yourself in the top two and letting no one else get near.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what you're also seeing as well is there is a little bit of a fear factor. A few of these women are like, I want to win here, but not at the cost of missing out. You know, to get top twos, even though it's only top one who was secured. And that's why I thought, you know, there was going to be a bit more of a sort of all or nothing approach from some of these big heads, you know, knowing that just secure, you know, if someone like Katie Snowden, just get selection sewn up here, get it done. You know, you could have won that thing today. Was in great form, comes in with, you know, that four flat, like moving well, but just didn't see that level of confidence that you probably would have wanted to see from these women today. But credit to Calvert, it's another great close. And yeah, I hope she can go make that team now and go and run, you know, sort of, yeah, low four qualify and we'll see her back here in Birmingham in a few weeks.
Yeah, I wonder if she puts herself in contention for Scottish selection as well. For the commies, I'm not sure if they've already made that decision. It's not just been announced.
Obviously, well, they're going to have a bloody good team, aren't they? Yeah. Calvert, Muir and Wallace. Yeah.
But, mate, someone who did really come stamp her authority down, Georgia Bell. We were speaking just before we recorded. 155.9, championship record, 25 degrees. We weren't there today, to be fair, but I can't imagine the conditions were amazing. They're not Diamond League conditions. That's one of the best runs. Or is it third in the world behind where Vera and Keeley, right?
Yep.
It's probably worth a 154 somewhere, right?
Yeah.
And then we're talking about, right, we'll speak about Keeley in a bit, but I'm not sure Keeley walks away with that race.
Oh, it would have been interesting. It would have been very interesting. I mean, I think, could we have pictured Keeley running, front running 155 high, no competition at the British Champs? We could picture
the way around it would have been, right? Say they race together, that would be Keeley at the front with Georgia.
Bell would have sounded. Yeah, look, what you're basically saying, if Georgia Hunter Bell and Keeley race today, who wins? And you're basically saying that performance was so good that you think Hunter Bell would have claimed victory.
Well, I think it would be closer than a lot of us would have predicted pre the weekend.
I don't know, because obviously Hunter Bell beat her last year you know, over two laps, and yeah, she's front running. She doesn't get the same sort of opportunities as Keeley does to go and chase these times. Is she quite as quick? Like, does she have a 154 low in her or even a 153 high in her? We won't know. I mean, I thought it was telling she sort of went 57.0 at 400. Like, it was, you know, that's fast, but there's probably an element of control there as well. So I think
Georgia's the sort of athlete that could run 154.5 off of 57.
Yeah, probably. I mean, if she had a bit of help on that first lap, then you feel a bit better going into that second lap. Yeah, wave light, something to hunt down that last 200. You know, she probably, I mean, she was 126 at 600, I think. Probably had a quick glance there and was like, God, I'm on for a goodie, you know. So definitely more competition. Got no doubt she can go quicker. Whatever happened to Keely today, I mean, Keely watched it and then decided not to line up for the 400. No, I'm just joking. Obviously, well, we didn't actually know, but actually just on the back end of the commentary there, apparently Tim got a text off Jenny and Jenny said, small twinge for Keely.
Yeah, she looked pretty upset, didn't she?
That's the risk you take when you're sort of pushing for the fours, though. You are pushing your body in a slightly different way. And, you know, when you're chasing that speed, which obviously they recognize they need to go after this world record, you then start to lose a little bit of that focus for your event. And I hope it's nothing serious. You know, I hope she...
all the block starts and things like that it's just, you wouldn't be doing. Like, don't get me wrong.
Runners just don't need to get involved in that.
You don't need the 0 to 15 meter.
No.
Starts that you're doing, and she wears sprint spikes as well.
It's different. It's slightly different mechanics, you know, compared to an 8. So, I mean, we'll see how that one develops. I'm sure it's nothing major. I mean, they have got to take caution, given you know the season she wants to go on and have. But it was very impressive from Georgia, Look, we're looking at what is going to be exciting is actually part of me just like do the 800 at Euros.
Oh God.
Femke, by the way, Femke's just won in Hengelo 157. So she's now, starting to really get familiar with the 800 even more. There's every chance Femke can be in 155 shape come the Euros, which then you get everyone in a race. But Georgia, Keely, Vera, and Femke. Oh. That would be it. So, and maybe Georgia, you know, a small part of her that enjoys the 800 a little bit more. So,
yeah.
But like I said,
that's her event before she took some time away from the sport. Mate, I just love to see her double.
Look, the goal, I think the gold is hers.
She's so well trained and their group is so like professional that you're in the right spot if you want to attempt six races over the course of a championship, right?
I mean, I actually don't think that's
not saying it's easy, but
I think it depends what comes first. Maybe the 15s first and then the 8 is just a bonus. Probably is that way. 1500 is usually first, so yeah, I'll go out on a limb there and say 15 will be first. So if that's the case, you know, I think she would want to get that gold sewn up. The gold definitely, is hers. If she lines up for that 1500, I think is hers to lose, I should say. But look, Izzy Boffi did, you know, got after it 159.5. I think she'll be happy with that. And again, probably, obviously you've got Keely, but probably starting to, I guess that cements her place at the Euros, I would say, and a massive bronze for Lucy Armitage, PB 2:45. And yeah, I was very impressed with those in behind as well, like Grace Van Zanu. It was quite a different women's 800 lineup to Usin, but we're starting to see these new names make podiums. And so I think we're starting to see what future could look like in this event.
Well, Izzy Boffi's one. Isn't that the way it's worded? Isn't Georgia pre-selected because she medaled last year?
Georgia and Keely will both be pre-selected, yeah.
So then Boffi gets auto because she technically counts as the winner for today then. Because that was the one wording in there was
winner
is pre-selected, second place gets the spot. So Boffi's cemented that, so that's spot on for her. Like you say, nice run from her, backs up that obviously impressive indoor time outdoors. And the thing is, for the athletes like Boffi, who kind of, I'm not saying she knew she was gonna qualify, but I'm sure they're prepping their season to really come into shape later in the year. And they've wanted to try and come into British camps in a good place, but not be spent. Move over to the men's 8, and I don't know about you, mate. Like, look, I know we're big fans of Patterson on this podcast. I thought that was a pretty, like, I guess it was, it looked inexperienced, that run. It was like a Patterson
years
ago where his strength is coming from behind and surprising people, but you can't do that anymore because you're against someone with the caliber of a Whiteman, and you're not an unknown entity anymore, and people know you're going to be coming. And I just thought he needs to take closer order on the Diamond League circuit, let alone at a British champs.
Yeah, I mean, he's lost by, what's that, nine hundredths of a second. It was agonizingly close. I agree with you. I mean, Dave Reagan, we love him to bits. He, oh man,
yeah, we're not blaming you.
Has he got any hair left? Watching Patterson, but yeah, it's one of those situations where you look at how close it was at the end, and of course, Patterson will always argue it is the best way for him to run. That is how he likes to run his races. He's closing that last 100 hard, but you're right with that field. It's just a lot of bodies that you have to go by that actually, he knows
good.
He can get by them. But Whiteman's positioning is he's never outside the top three. He always feels very strongly about just making sure you are in contact. You're in contact to cover moves, make moves as well. So he always runs a little bit differently. I guess I sort of expected that. But yeah, they're both shaping up very well, though. I think this result doesn't actually show us how the sort of shape they're both in. Like, I think Whiteman is in great shape. I'm very excited to see what he can do over 15. And obviously Patterson, we've seen already what he's run on the Diamond League, but I also think he's going to be in great championship shape as well.
Yeah. I get what you're saying. I think he needs to play to his strengths as well. I'm not saying tear up the handbook and go Rudisha on it or go A-Rop on it. Like, I think there's an element of, like, if he wants to, he doesn't just want a medal. Like, the guy's so confident, he's so ambitious that he wants to win championships, particularly on a European level, right? I just think you can't be like leaving it so late. And I think this was an opportunity for me. A British champs is an opportunity where he could have got right in and amongst it and practiced that and really tried to do that. Where you're going a lot slower than you would be on a Diamond League circuit or in...
Yeah, well, I mean, it wasn't crazy fast. I think where this tactic works, the tactics of his closing that last 100 works really well. If that first lap was 50-51 today. Boys are fading on the back stretch. You know, so much easier to just swing by them and there's a lot of sitting ducks with 100 to go, but it was 52.5, and for a lot of them, they're very capable of doing that, and you can see how close it was. I mean, Boswell's 146.0, then you've got Jonas 10th of a second back, Higgins another 10th of a second back. You know, they're all finishing. It's a blanket finish, as it always is in the 800 in that scenario. So it was a hard pace, but it was a very sort of manageable pace for a lot of them. They're so familiar with that, and I think that's, that tactic of his does work when it is fast from the gun. But in this sort of race, obviously just didn't work today, but I do think Whiteman is in very good shape. So I don't think we can take and analyse too much from Patterson here. It's a bit like last year when those two racing the Toot and BMC and Patterson takes Whiteman down, and I'm thinking, Whiteman's, he needs to be moving better than that for me over 800 if he's going to go and challenge at the Worlds and look 5-6 weeks later goes and gets the silver medals in shape of his life. And I think we are seeing that these are... And you mentioned about in the women's eight, people like Boffy aiming for the commies, aiming for the Euros. These guys are definitely doing that. Not even, although Patterson's run quick this year, they won't even be kicking into that real top end speed work that they're going to layer on in the next 6 to 8 weeks. So there's a lot more to come from them. Look, Botterill in third. I was pretty, very pleased for him because he ran, a quick time in the week, 144.1 over in Nice. I think it was Monday night or Tuesday night. And I thought, look, great time, and we even said on the preview, I think, go back it up, and he did go back it up. So yeah, credit to him, that's a big run and a breakthrough performance, and it does put him, unfortunately you've got someone like Bergen to come into the fold. It's going to be very interesting to see who they pick for that third spot at the champs.
Do we know what was up with Bergen? I might have missed.
I don't know what was up with him, but yeah, just withdrawal. He's withdrawn from a few events, but
it's frustrating. I think it's really frustrating.
Yeah.
I think just frustrating for the other athletes, right? I just, look, again, I'm someone, I want us to send the best team we can. I want Bergen to be running well. I think it's great for the sport, great for distance running in the UK, whatever, but so is having him at the champs, and so is giving people like Botchel a chance to put him away. And
yeah, he's won his fair share of, I do agree with you there. He's won his fair share of British champs, though. You know, he's been there, he's done it before multiple times. It is a shame he wasn't here this weekend. And it does almost feel like, look, we'll get onto the women's five. Megan Keith, obviously wasn't in that five. I presume she wants to go for the 10, but there's definitely going to be a part of her that wants to double, I'm sure. And didn't do the 10K trial, didn't do the 5K trial. I'm not saying that you have to, because obviously you don't. But it seems stupid when you race the week before, and it was the same on a 10K trial. She wanted to go race in Eiffel
as well
that
she
day,
went and
yeah, and Liverpool
so,
Cross as well. So, yeah, there's a few circumstances and a few scenarios which are frustrating, and athletes are shaping their season around running fast, especially at this top end, running fast, and probably less so. They're not really the British champs is like, okay, it's that race we've got to do, but they're probably not factoring it in. They're going, okay, where are we going to run fast, and then how are we going to prepare for the Euros or the major that is? And then it's like, okay, the afterthought is we've got to negotiate British champs, or not.
Surprise money on it, don't we?
Wax surprise money on it.
It's the only way to get.
Like I said, you
can't throw with the selection.
No, they open it. I knew this would happen when you just go to one auto. And you then have two discretionary spots. Of course, that's going to happen. Athletes are going to exploit the hell out of it. Look, Gemma Riki took a really nasty fall a little while back in, I think it was Bydgoszcz. It was bad. I was surprised to see her still racing after that. So again, unfortunately, she wasn't at this British champs, but there was quite a few people not there or able to switch events, etc. And that is only going to get worse over the next few years if they keep it as one auto.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
and the events, there's only one person. Yeah. And if there's an event, on the off chance, there's one person who has the time, they're never going to show up.
Yeah. That's it. And the switching events thing, it's okay. Like, at least they're showing up. And I know the timetable doesn't allow them to double, but I think unless you're a world or Olympic champ, that's the only people.
And even agree with that. Yeah, I agree with that.
Rather, it wasn't anyone. It's going to be anyone. A world and Olympic champion, current.
Well, I think world medalists. I do think Wyman's situation, fair. Keely's situation, definitely fair. Georgia, definitely fair. If you're a world medalist, then I do think you do have a sway, because, they're going to go, they're after world records now as well. So sort of shaping their season around that. The British champs is... We shouldn't be sort of forcing them to do British champs over breaking a world record. But yeah, I agree with you. Anyone else, there's a lot of people who are just, they've got a standard, and that's all they've got. They're still yet to sort of prove themselves. So it is a shame. But look, we go back to Botchel in third. I thought that was brilliant, and he puts himself in the driving seat for that selection now. And to be honest, I hope he gets it. Henry Jonas fourth, again, good run for him. He's 21 years of age. He definitely has a good future in the 800. It looked like he was tracking Bergen a little bit. It sort of looked like, the two Loughborough boys. Jonas is like, well, I'll just follow you. Patterson. I'm just going to follow him. I know you're going to finish amongst the medals and probably win this thing. So, I do pretty well to follow you. So, yeah, he comes through in fourth. The Higgins brothers, by the way, great champs for them, and Tonbridge overall as well. So, yeah, it was a good 800 all in all on that men's side.
Yeah, should we chat about the 5Ks?
Classy
run from Malarkey. Just so in control and really kind of saved something from the last 100. Pumped the arms, looked good. Yeah. Nice to see James West and Butchie on the podium as well. I didn't even know Westie was actually going to compete. Obviously, he's had surgery not that long ago. Yeah. Bronze medal for him, and just shows his class at British champs, right? If the guy had had any sort of training under his belt, he wins that race. he's just never like out.
I think he had surgery.
When was
very good comeback. I actually don't know what month it was. It was in the winter sometime. And he's been building back, and obviously he raced over in Finland. He was in that race that a lot of the Brits and the Irish DNF'd. Westie did finish that one. And obviously today he runs a touch quicker than he ran out in Finland. So here's a step up for him in a championship race. And I was just listening to his interview post-race there with Sicalo, who's on the ground up at Champs doing a great job. And Westie was sort of saying, his aim It seems like there's a spot now for the Euros, so he's going to go and chase that time. He's probably got one crack at it, but his aim this year was just to sort of get back, compete, and really sort of focus on Worlds and Olympics next year, because he knows that what it's going to take to run those standards and qualify for those.
Wow,
it's going
to
be very difficult.
Pod. You'd know he just needs to go and hit some 3Ks. And
well, I'm sure he knows that, and I'm sure he's gonna plan for that as well. Yeah, go run a few 735 3Ks, and you've got every chance to qualify. But again, because next year, you look at next year, because the Olympics is the following year, that window at the back end of next year opens, and so people can be training for Worlds and box off the Olympic standard or really help their ranking towards the Olympic Games. And so it is a very important year next year if you are...
Yeah, by the Olympics, though, it'll be full discretionary spots, all three. So,
this is the worry, right? I mean, yeah. So, but look, Dave Mullarkey, back to him. I mean, yeah, classy stuff. From him, fastest man on paper. I expected him to win this one. He won it in a dominating fashion. Don't know how much he had left, actually, because Butchie had a very good close. I was surprised how well Butchie closed. And again, he's got more to give this season. I feel like not just this season for Butchie, but like actually he's getting a second wind. I think he can, I'd love to see him keep this moving into next year and the year after, because there's definitely a world where he can run 13-0, 13-10. At some point over the next couple of years. But
yeah, we kind of saw him go to the roads and I was like, it makes sense, everyone does it, but I'm really glad he's dropped back down again, and we are seeing him race on this, because you look at the way Butchie runs, his form and everything, he's such a good technician on the track.
He makes the right moves and puts himself in the right spots, and he actually looked like he was enjoying himself out there. So
Yeah,
credit to him. But Mullarkey, I think, should be, we mentioned, didn't we, about the rankings and stuff. That should be enough for him to go to the Euros. Will he have another crack over 5K if the opportunity arises? We'll see. Westy was solid for third. Scott Beattie, unfortunately, fourth, and is, again, probably a doubt for the Euros, which is... Yeah, going to be very unfortunate for him.
Yeah, it's tough out there. It's tough running. I just think he's not... I don't know. He clearly didn't back his kick against those guys, right? And just did too much work to ever win that race.
Yeah.
Without doing work, right? Like, I think they mentioned on comms, he went 61, 64. And everyone just...
Yeah.
For Westy, Butchart, Mullarkey, at 64, they're recovering. Their heart is good.
Yeah, especially at that point in the race. Yeah, he wasn't able to sustain that. I think he did the right thing. He just wasn't able to sustain that effort.
It's so tough, yeah. Jake Smith set him up nicely.
Sure, Jake Smith, what did he lead? I think he led about 9 laps of that race.
He definitely went through 3K.
No, he went through 3K. He led at least 9 laps of that race. And then, because it was, was it 8 laps? Yeah, it was like 4 to go. BT sort of hit the front and started pushing on. So yeah, he's led 8 laps of that. And you know what? To bounce back off of London, that was solid from him. 13:42. I was pretty impressed with Jake Smith today, actually.
Yeah.
Fair play, because I don't know how many other men could have done that. Obviously, lead for as long as he did. Still come out with a pretty clutch time there. So very solid. I mean, Kavanagh pulls his way into fifth. That's his best run of the season. There were lots of PBs today, and that's the fastest champs we've seen. I mean, there was 11 men. There's a sort of 10, 11, 12 men, sub 14 minutes. We have not seen that for a long time at champs. So, yeah, I was very impressed with just the depth out there, and everyone sort of turned up and was happy to really get after it. I mean, it was easy when someone like Smith just clips off 64, 65s for everyone for 2 miles. I mean, yeah, he set it up really nicely for a lot of men to capitalize in PB.
Yeah, similar to Mark Pearce, but we'll come to the steeples after we chat about the women's five. Hannah Nuttall, I guess, great run from her. Not taking anything away from her, but I guess, like we said before, Megan Keith no show is probably the bigger story here. And we'd have just loved to see Nuttall, Fitzgerald, and Keith go toe to toe, right? And it's a real shame, because it doesn't give Ines or Hannah opportunities to show that they're better than her in a tactical race.
Yeah,
it's the athletes who are competing. And
I think we do that. I said it before, Nuttall would have beaten Megan Keith. I think, not sure about Ines, but yeah, Nuttall, I honestly think Nuttall just wins that race, whoever she's up against. She's just a very, very good racer. And yeah, I mean, never obviously yeah, a few DNFs. Lucy Jones, Amelia Quirk, India Weir. Bit of a shame. So only 8 finishes in the women's 5K, which is always a bit of a sad watch when you see that, because you know
we've got a lot of girls.
That's a worry. We've got a lot of quality,
In terms of the British champ standard. So they're out there. I'm pretty sure. If you look at our rankings,
I think it's a classic case of a lot of them are 15 5K runners, and a lot opt for the 1500 at champs. And obviously there just is, and I think this is what you're seeing, because there's such a contrast in the top of the field to the back end at something like champs. You know, there's a minute, you know, there's a minute between the women at the front, in comparison to those who get the, I think 1550 was the qualifying standard. So it's a lot over 5K. So I think it's easy for quite a few women to sort of be a little bit turned away from getting out there.
Yeah, and even today, like you look at the quality of the three who've come towards the back in Dana, Hannah Irwin. Well,
Hannah Irwin, yeah. And so you look on paper, like what, and that's basically what, and to be fair to this field, right, this is a bloody good field. You've obviously got Nuttall, you've got Fitzgerald, you've got Eloise Walker, great third place for her. Grace Copeland, Almi Nuraka, both those two running PBs, 15:25, 15:29, super runs, Danit Irwin and Ockenden, you know, these are all of, and then Jones, Quirk and Weir were the ones who pulled out. So yeah, you just didn't have, like on the men's side, you've got a lot of those who are sort of top domestic, trying to challenge, trying to get that breakthrough. You've almost had a load of women here who've already had that breakthrough. They're up there, they're competing, and there was no one there for experience yesterday for those those women. You didn't have anyone like that. So which is a bit of a shame. So whether I guess they need to stand firm on their qualifying standard, and people will chase it and get after it, I'm sure, over the next few years.
Yeah, let's shout out a women's steeple. Elise Thorner, I think this is the one we were like, well, this is a given, right? 9:16 from the front, classy run. And I think, again, like she's someone that really didn't need to show up today or yesterday. She'd been selected anyway. So good to see her coming out. Good to see her winning, and good to see her getting after rather than just sitting in and having a ride and winning this thing. And
I agree with you. It's an important run, I think, for Thorna. And the reason I say that is because when you look at European Champs heat, commies probably won't have heats, will it? I imagine commies will be a straight final. But when you look at the Europeans, there will be a heat. And that is the kind of performance that you probably need to go and do in the heat. You need to get out there. You need to run a strong, relaxed 9:15 to 9:20, something in that region. And you know that only 3 or 4 women are going to be able to do that in the heat. And so you're going to be comfortable. You're going to be safe. You're going to tick off that big queue, and you're going to be able to prepare for the finals. So for me, obviously, I don't know if that was her aim or objective, but actually when I watched it, I was like, that's a worthwhile experience for her. Obviously, there's another British title there, but in her case, she has got to get quite comfortable front running. She's starting to get to a level, and you know, she front ran for a lot of it in LA right at the start of the season, and she virtually front ran a lot in the Diamond League as well, because I think she was bridging the gap for that group. So she's getting good at it, and I think she needs to be good at it, because at some point in the Europeans, whether it's a heat or whether it's the final, she's probably going to have to make a move and sort of either cover a move or make a move and press and try and get rid of a few people. So I think this front running, these races where she finds herself at the front by a long, long way is probably good experience for her.
Yeah. Outside of Thorna, Stevie Lawrence wrist PB in second place, 9:32, and then these two well ahead of the rest of the field. Not sure what's going on with Sarah Tate, 10:01 in third place. Obviously had the standard from last year. No Carrie Hughes, but I have seen she's been selected for Wales for the commies over the steeple. So she'll be competing in a few weeks' time for that one.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, yeah, if she is, I mentioned that I think I saw she was in the preview, she looks a little bit injured. So yeah, she might have to turn that down. Maybe she just gets right for the Euros. But yeah, more finishes in the women's steeple than the women's 5K. How about that for a stat? Steeplechase is on the rise, I'm telling you, at not just the senior level. It's a massive win that we've got people like Thorner for these athletes to look up to. Obviously, we had Lizzie Bird as well, Amy Pratt. But then again, like I've seen at the English schools level, when you're seeing how many people are doing steeple now, you know, they're big, big fields, like 15, 60, 70 people running steeple at English schools. And, you know, kids are really attacking this event. So that is a massive plus. And yeah, so it was just great to see a deep field at the, you know, and a big field at the British Champs. And same on the men's side as well.
Yeah.
15 of them in it.
Yeah, you mentioned the depth in terms of performance on the day in the men's five. We got 10 guys sub nine.
Yeah.
In steeple today. And I remember when 9 minutes was the standard, right? And so in the actual race, you get guys running all sorts.
Yeah.
Over in there, a few bodies. You've been there, mate. I'm sure. I seem to recall. But I shouldn't take the piss. I shouldn't take the piss. I wish I was there myself. So,
no, yeah. I agree.
I'd be there to get my ass kicked. But yeah, I mean, mate, Mark Pierce just was that like premedicated, or did he
they hadn't had any discussion about this. Again, I was just, you know, Sakala's done a great job with the interview, catching up with Imhoff there. Huge run for him. And I think obviously seeing his NCAA results, it probably was more in a bag, you know, despite it being Eugene, despite it being the hype of an NCAAs, you're obviously going to run fast in that environment. But when you do two steeples, you know, running 8:20 on your second steeple in 2 days is fair. And I think it was three or four steeples in, well, that's three steeples in pretty much a week and a half for him anyway. And then he had the regions before that. So he's raced a lot. And so when you see that 8:20, you're like, yep, you definitely expect him to be able to come and put on a show. But yeah, Mark Pierce, who would have thought that? I mean, actually, I've still got the lap splits here because...
I was going to say, were the comms... were they right on comms in terms of... Because
Did I not answer the question? Yeah, so Imhoff said in the interview
that they're basically... I were way off it, and I was thinking, did they slow that much in the second K?
Well, the problem is it didn't, because their first K was so sharp. You know, they were 240... I think 242, and then even at 2K, you know, despite slowing, there was still 5:37, which is about 8:24, 8:25 pace.
Yeah,
and obviously Imhoff is closing. He's closing 2:41 for his last K, which is bloody impressive. And that's just what you learn in the NCAAs. I don't know. Yeah. Because if you can't close in the NCAAs, you are never going to. I mean, it's kind of a lesson for all.
Well, look at someone running, like,
right? If you can't close, you're never going to feature. Yeah.
So, like, we'll remember when he was doing regionals, closing in 60, 61. But that's probably something that, yeah, his times have come down since then. That was when he was running 8:30 odd, you'd say.
Yeah.
But that's not come down because the environment's so different and the races you're in are so different to what Imhoff's in right now.
It comes with practice. You know, and you just can't simulate that anywhere. You do a PMC, you do a European Tour, you do, you know, Diamond League or whatever. Like, you just cannot, simulate that, these big closes, these hammering that last eight, hammering that last four, you know.
And in the Diamond League, unless you're in the lead pack,
unless you're up
Cali, no one's running like that anyway.
You're fucked.
Yeah.
Everyone else is like last legs. Yeah, they'll take a 63, 64, you know, and they're still, you know, when they're running like 8:10 or whatever, you know, running. So, yeah, it just looked very strong. And, yeah, it was good to see them really get after it. And that was Mark Pierce. So, obviously, that was his decision to do that. He wasn't doing it for him, according to the interview. But, and paid the price a bit, Pierce, you know, comes up fourth in 8:40. I wonder if he looks at this and goes, was that the right thing to do? I've got a European ranking spot. I'm in a good position. You know, okay, I haven't run the auto queue, but I'm there to be picked. And as soon as you sort of see him do that for the first 600, the first 800, you know, about 64 on the first lap, you're thinking, yeah, like he's going to struggle to hold one, hold that rhythm, and two, stay amongst this top three, because it was looking like a race where the top three are probably going to, you know, that's good points for Battersill, good points for my brother. He's obviously got the auto queue anyway.
Well, that's what I was going
to
say.
You
contrast that with Zach's race, and the guy comes in with the standard, doesn't need to do anything, and just stays out of trouble all race. Mm. And actually, at one point, I thought when he was moving quite nicely ahead of Battersill, that he might actually win the thing, but just faded a bit in the last lap, didn't he? But didn't do any of the work, and I guess just this is where he was on the day, and decent season's best. So I think he's got a chance with that standard, you know.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. Like I said, he's had a tough couple of weeks. Who hasn't? Hey, like Imhoff's travelled back from, he's had the NCAAs and travelled back from America. So yeah, no excuses for him there. But yeah, certainly I think if he's aiming to peak at the right time, that's for sure. So hopefully he can get picked, and then he can start to really shape his season and just prioritize that recovery and everything like that, and take a bit of time off work in his preparations for it. But yeah, and season's best for him, 8:23. I mean, he hasn't. I said to my brother before, actually, I sent him a text and said, "Mate, this is your 14th champs. Feel old yet?" Like, you know. And yeah, 11 British,
yeah.
Yeah, 11 British champs medals, and he's done 14. British championships consecutive years since 2012. And yeah, to be honest, like that's a bit of a stat from him. And yeah, so credit to him for turning out all those years, because it would be very easy some years to not bother with British champs, as we know, but to do 14 on the bounce is pretty impressive. And Batsil, credit to him, 8:22. And he does thrive in those positions, Batsil. I think, you know, the race was fast. He measured it well. He sat, you know, him and Zach did sit off it a touch. I say a touch, you know, maybe half a second or a second through that first lap.
It was smart, though, wasn't it? It was really smart running from the two of them, I thought. They were close enough that they weren't letting anything get away, but they were just
I think, you know, someone like Batsil knows that Pierce, he's not going to sustain 65s, is he?
No.
He's not going to run an 8:10, even an 8:15 there today. There's only one man capable of that, and that was Imhoff. And yeah, like, you could argue that he should have took the lead further out, but I think he knows his strengths, and he knows that, you know, I can afford to let the race, after that first K, let the race slow a bit, and then really, you know, he knows that I can pretty much, he's got himself in a position and fitness wise. And this is what we saw from Kenneth Rooks and all these guys, and your Georgie Beamish, your Kenneth Rooks of the world, your Dan Mikowskis. They get themselves in a position where they can run, you know, in Rooks' case, it's like he can run a 58 last lap. If you can run a 58 last lap, you can afford to lap in 66s and still go and run a sub 8:10.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of a thing. Imhoff's got himself in this position where it's like he can run a 60 last lap. And so, you know, he can afford to be way off it at sort of 2K. If you can close in 2:41, I mean, that's 8:03 pace.
Yeah.
And you're only trying to run 8:20. And that's, you know, we've seen it in the 5K as well. Men sort of attack the 5K in that manner. But yeah, that's something which I think is possible. And we're starting to see it more and more in the steeple, is men are exploiting that ability to close, because it's so hard to hold those 65, 66s to try and run like 8:10, 8:15. But if you can close in 2:02 and you can run a 58, 59, that's 5-6 seconds quicker than what you're lapping in.
Yeah. I also think where the race tends to stretch out, they just get such better sight of the barriers, unless you're like in some race where you've got five or six guys all battling in the last lap. They get such a better sight of the barriers that they can really turn the screw a little bit. Whereas a lot of the time in the early stages anyway, you want to get on it, but you can't see. So they can't hurdle properly anyway.
Yeah.
And it's really hard for them to like navigate that aspect of the race and stay safe, if you like, and not fall. So yeah, fair play to Imhoff today. And mate, I think that wraps us up. Have you got performance of the champs, performance of the weekend?
Well, do you know what? It's so tough because you think, you know, Georgia Hunter-Bell, just because you expect her to win, but you still can't take anything away from her. That 1:55 championship record was amazing. But I think for me, just, you know, we saw Sarah Calvert turn heads and pull off a massive surprise last year. But I think the surprise is, and maybe it shouldn't be a surprise, because that men's 15, I think, with Giles slightly off it and Gourley having not raced, actually it was wide open, so maybe it's not even that much of a surprise. But I think that was very impressive, and I wish him all the best for the next 5 or 6 weeks to try and chase that standard. I mean, Imhoff's 8:18, like, that's it again, championship record, that too, like, that steeple was bloody impressive. It was so good to see four of them, you know, really competing for a long time, going and then going into the last lap is sort of three, last 600 at least, three of them in it. And difficult to call, mate. We've seen a lot of championship records this weekend, actually.
Yeah, we have. And the sprints as well. There was a few as well.
I think it was the girl who beat Amy Hunt in the 200. Success.
Yeah.
What was her name? Like that.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I was like,
yeah, 22:43. Wow.
Mate, and Moore just beating Amy Hunt in the 200, like beating a world medalist.
Especially after yesterday.
It's unbelievable.
Winning 100.
Yeah, but just... But do you know what? I'm going to give it to Christian Amorf, actually. I think, yeah, running 8:18 and that men's steeple. So maybe there's some good bias there for the event of the steeple. But yeah, I'll probably give it to him off.
I think I'd go Calvin myself. I don't know if it's because it just capped off the afternoon as well, but I just think doing it twice is so impressive. It's like Arlo coming back next year and winning it. And it's not even that. Who was missing from that race bar Georgia Bell?
Well, Shemariki. I think Shemariki would have done the 1500. She would have.
Yeah.
You're right. Walcott Nolan was in there.
But like a pretty impressive field to be as well. Twice on the bounce.
I do worry, like, you know, some of those our big 1500 meter women have really struggled over the years at champs to race properly. There is a lack of...
But it's the same
seems
as the men's
to be
eight.
A lack
it's
of like racing. The men's eight as well. Yeah.
Women's eight and the men's 15. And then the opposite events are just, it's promising athletes. And then, yeah. But then, like, yeah, it's because you put Georgia in there and it makes it look like, actually, no, there's no problem in the women's 15 because we got Georgia Bell. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And only one athlete can win at the end of the day. And it's not always the fastest on paper. So yeah, for me today, the champs this weekend was just a massive advert of why times are becoming even more irrelevant than perhaps they already were. You know, obviously they guide the form book a little bit, but with the opportunities, and you said the way the sport's moving, the tracks, the races that can get set up for some of these big names, it's not quite as, you know, the 332s are not as impressive as, you know, just getting out there and trying to win.
Yeah. Scrap the qualifying times. This is real racing. Just let whoever in. Like, win it. Our British champs win.
Well, they don't scrap the qualifying times because then they'd have to rely on these rankings. I think basically just make the, you know, keep the qualifying times as achievable marks.
350 in the 1500, you know, like, whatever.
Well, yeah, I think they sort of look at it and maybe, yeah, instead of ramping the qualifying times up, you could leave them. I mean, it was only a few years ago. It used to be like 336, 335. You could keep the standards there and then really encourage this sort of racing.
That's the thing. All you need to do is have a point where they're not going to get.
But the worry, you know, the big names sell championships, and the worry for the governing bodies, you know, World Athletics, European Athletics, the worry for them is that you have a championships where, you know, think of America, you know, how cutthroat their business, you know, their trials are. And, you know, there's a world where you should have Cole Hawker, you should have Nagush, you should have the three fastest Americans and some of the three fastest runners ever over the mile, over the 1500, and there's a world where none of them qualify for a major championships. And then people are like, you know, the big guns, it's like having a World Cup without England there. Yeah, it's like...
But that's happened. That happens, World Cup. That happens there, right? Like, look at Italy not qualifying.
Italy aren't the same kettle as fish as us, mate. But yeah, no.
Oh, no, I'm not... But yeah, they've won it four times, right? And I think that's the thing. Really? Any other sport that doesn't... It doesn't happen, and it's not allowed.
Yeah,
it's the same way. Like, yeah, like when Man United haven't been in the Champions League the past few years.
Yeah,
right. And it we can't just allow to like players get mixed up now. We can't allow athletes just to get in on who they are. Yeah. I mean, the reason we all look at the US champs and we watch is because of that jeopardy, right? It's because we know that upsets can happen. We know as soon as they've crossed the line, that's the team. Even I find it jarring in the US champs when the fifth place guy is actually the first, or like the third guy with the time, and then they have to wait. That is
The third place hasn't got a time or something like that.
Jars me, like, because I think we're like, but most of the time, obviously, because of the depth they have, they do all have the standards, but it makes the trial so interesting. Like, we had fantastic racing this weekend. And
well, to be fair, it goes to the form book, right? It goes to
the form book. Pre-empty.
To be fair, though, it looked busier than the NCAA. Like, people do hype up the NCAA, and obviously the standard of performances of the NCAA is off the charts, but you watch that. Empty, you know.
But since they got rid of old Hayward, it's not been the same.
No, but like, I reckon there was more crowd at British Champs than there is at the NCAA. And you think of the money and investment in the NCAA in, you know, versus UK athletics. You know, it's huge, and the talent and the hype around the sport over over in the States, especially at that NCAA level, which is bigger than the pro level. But yeah, that stadium wasn't, you know, wasn't packed to rafters by any means. So I think we have more people at Champs, to be fair. And you know what? I think last year it was definitely a bit busier last year, but I think it helps being in August. Definitely helps. You know, people are on their, the kids are on their summer holidays, whereas, you know, it's still, you know, a lot of kids are still in school, exams, all this shenanigans. So I think that that probably makes it a little bit more difficult. And actually, people are still racing. Look, there was a lot of races this weekend. So I think, you know, there was, if you're a youngster, there was a lot of school, there was a lot of English schools qualifying rounds and regional rounds and whatnot. It was an SAL this weekend. So yeah, I think when it's in August, it should be a blackout weekend. Hey,
you know, in Wales, when Wales playing rugby, there's no club rugby.
Really, it's just a blackout. Yeah,
and then they all go to their clubs and they watch. And we're not big rugby fans on the pod, but it's pretty cool. Like, yeah, they all go and watch.
But BA could do that. Yeah, they control the calendar. I don't know why they don't do that. Just say, right, British Champs weekend, blackout. All of you get 50% off tickets and get yourself in the stadiums. Like, it's that, and come and watch. That is to be fair what they should do. But anyway, man, what a pleasure. That was probably the best. I mean, that was a better champs than last year. Very, very exciting. I know we didn't have a few of the big names, many storylines coming out of this one. And I can't wait. We're going to hopefully speak to, if you're listening and you were on the podium at British Champs, expect a DM from me. We're going to hopefully speak to as many as possible. Next week.
The goal is to get all the winners on. So if you're,
the goal is to get all the winners on.
If you end up being the one winner, if you're listening, that doesn't accept this
I'll podcast. Take second place. I'll take third place as well. I want everyone on over the next 3 or 4 weeks. But what a good weekend, man. So we'll see you all. We'll be back with an episode, hopefully midweek. We do have the small matter of Lum's wedding really getting in the way. So it might be Thursday, Friday until we get this episode churned out. And he'll be on his honeymoon as well, so it'll just be me. So it's whether I can find a guest.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll sort something out, mate. I'm sure you'll sort something. Just go back and listen to, do you know, mate, what's your favorite episode we've done? I'm sure we got loads of listeners who've not listened to every episode. What's your favorite? People can go back and listen to that.
Yeah, that's a good question. We are 6 years in the game now. And
I looked, and including all the bonus, we're about 350 episodes, mate, including all bonus episodes and everything.
We've done 350 episodes.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. And counting. Favorite episode there. I mean, take your pick. There's coaches. Do you know what I was thinking the other day? I was sorting the office out a little bit, just rejigging a few books. I went and stumbled across Out of Thin Air by Michael Crawley, who wrote that book on the Ethiopians. Yeah. And that was very early on in our podcasting days. Mm. And that was a great episode. And if you haven't read the book Out of Thin Air, you should probably go and watch it.
Yeah. And I think what's cool about that, it comes out of his PhD research as well. So for me, as someone like into my research, as an academic, it's nice knowing that wasn't written as a journalistic piece. And that was someone who's gone through and they've done it properly and they've really gone and observed what's going on there, rather than, I guess, taking a bit more creative license with what they report, right? I think that one as well, yeah.
Good point.
Is a good one with Michael Crawley. I think for me, maybe
British Champs Review 2021.
I enjoy recording those. I think when we had Carl Dennehy on, similar to Mike Crawley, like obviously more from a journalistic sense, he went I think he lived with Kipchoge's camp for a month.
They opened Kipchoge's camp to the media for a couple weeks, and this is when Kipchoge's in his prime, when I think he'd just broken sub 2 hours, or is in the build up to the sub. To the 159. And Cahal is a brilliant journalist anyway, commentator, journalist. He is fontable knowledge when it comes to track and field.
Serious detail on Kipchoge's like training block, Patrick Sang's training block for a marathon.
It's probably the most we've ever learned out of that camp, actually. Yeah. That podcast was the week setup, volumes, intensities was probably the most we learned.
Mm. Yeah, I go back to that and scroll through the transcript. Same with Canova's one when I'm writing some training plans sometimes. Just a bit of a reminder, a bit of inspiration. There we have it. Right.
Reminisce.
Thanks for listening to us. So go listen to those if we haven't put anything out. Would recommend them or anything else. We've pretty much had every well, every decent British athlete that has not said no to us anyway. pretty much. I'll say that over the years. So go listen to your favorites. Thanks for listening to us. Thanks to Sport Shoes again for obviously supporting a podcast as always. And we'll catch you guys very, very soon.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.